You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, if we want to improve our brains, we need to consider the brains of the people around us. Find out more with the author of the new book, The Tailored Brain. Now, a new poll came out today showing us how Wisconsin residents feel about the biggest problems facing the state and the nation. And no surprise, Republicans and Democrats don't see eye to eye on many of those threats, but on others, there's some agreement. According to the La Follette policy poll from UW-Madison, 39% say climate change is the biggest issue confronting the U.S. That's the top problem facing Wisconsin as well, but only 27% said so. More Democrats than Republicans say they're worried about climate change, but when asked what should be done about it, the two sides are closer than you might think. The poll also got into how politically active people in Wisconsin are in terms of voting, giving money to candidates, working on campaigns, posting on social media, and other activities. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think is the biggest problem facing the nation and why? How about here in the state? Do you want to see action on things like climate change? Do you feel a level of confidence in government? If so, which level of government? Call it at 800-642-1234. And are there any issues where you feel like you go against your political party or the one you agree with on most things? 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Susan Webb-Yockey is director of the La Follette School of Public Affairs and a Collins Bascom Professor of Public Affairs and Political Science at UW-Madison. Susan, thanks a lot for joining us today.
I'm delighted to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, a lot of times, Susan, when people think of polls, they might think of those head-to-head matchups, say, in a political race. We're going to be seeing a lot of those this year. What were you setting out to find out in this survey?
Well, not that. So you're right. There are a lot of political polls out there, and there should be. I mean, there's important information revealed in those polls. But the inaugural La Follette School policy poll really aims to do something very different. Our aim is to take the temperature on the state for our key public policy issues. We want to know what's on people's minds and what do they want to see addressed by our policymakers.
What was your biggest takeaway from the responses you got?
You know, it's a long survey, and it's an exciting survey in the sense that we are tapping ideas across the entire state. So here we have about 1,600 Wisconsinites who are willing to share their views on different public policy issues with us. That turns out to be about a 33% response rate, which is huge for survey research these days. We're really excited. And we have responses from 71 of the 72 counties in Wisconsin. So a great spread of Wisconsin attitudes. And one of the things that I was most interested in was really dissecting what are the top policy problems that Wisconsinites see today. That was the question that I was most excited about in answering the policy poll. But I'll say that there are a bunch of other questions on the poll representing some of the interests of other faculty members at the La Follette School, like on climate change, race relations, government regulation, and other matters.
Before we start to look at particular issues, one pretty consistent theme seems to be people are kind of worried about this issue, a lot of different issues as it affects Wisconsin. They're way more worried when you ask them about the national level. What does that mean?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really interesting finding across the survey. And when I say across the survey, I mean across Republicans, independents, and Democrats. I mean across age brackets. I mean across genders. It is true that when we ask a bank of different policy topics to our respondents, and by a bank, I mean topics like climate change, education, healthcare, race relations, when we ask those topics to our citizens here in Wisconsin, we ask them at the national level and the state level, they're just much more concerned at the national level than they are at the state level.
Another thing that struck me, you know, Democrats way more worried, for example, than Republicans about climate change. Republicans were way more worried about the federal deficit. But it wasn't lockstep across the board. I think sometimes in politics, we think once you're on one side, you have this full menu of policy views. There's variation clearly among Republicans and among Democrats.
Absolutely. I mean, I found that really fascinating, too. I mean, it's no surprise that our poll reveals that Democrats in Wisconsin care more about climate change than Republicans. If we found the opposite, we'd probably be scratching our heads, right? But what's really interesting here is the degree of separation. I mean, we have, in particular, I focused on the Democrats in the poll who were saying that climate change at the national level is an extremely big problem or quite a problem. So they're really focused on its degree of difficulty and for our country. And that grouping suggests about 87% of Democrats think that climate change is either quite a problem or an extremely big problem, while only 26% of Republicans think that. But what's interesting there is, hey, 26% right. of Republicans in Wisconsin think climate change is an extremely big problem or quite a problem. That's interesting in and of itself.
Talking to Susan Webb-Yaki, director of the La Follette School of Public Affairs at UW-Madison, talking about a new survey, first one out today, gauging Wisconsinites' opinions on a lot of different issues, what we see as some of the biggest problems facing the state and the country. And you could join in with your answer to that question at 800-642-1234. What do you see as the most urgent concern facing Wisconsin and the country as a whole? In an election year, a midterm election year, what do you want your candidates talking about? What answers do you need before you go and vote for someone? And how politically active are you? Have you worked for a candidate? Are you planning to do that this year? Do you post about politics online? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Susan, you asked people about their level of political participation. What kind of things did you find out?
We found that people are in Wisconsin participate a lot in government. They participate a lot by sharing their voice. And I should note that anybody that's interested in these results, take a look at them for yourselves. If you Google the La Follette School and policy poll, you're going to come up with this fabulous interactive website where you can break down all of the results in the survey in pretty much any way you want to, by race, by gender, by age, by political identification, and by question bank. So you've just asked about participation and how we participate in kind of the public square, if you will. One of the results that really surprised me from the La Follette School policy poll was the number of people that are using social media to participate in the public square. So 32% of the respondents said they posted about a political issue that matters to them within the last year. So 32% of folks are using social media to get active in politics and policymaking here in Wisconsin, according to our survey.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Oh, not quite right there. Jeff is with us in Superior. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, good afternoon. You know, I've contacted my congressman, the one current and the previous one, as well as...
Are you still there, Jeff?
Okay. Northern Wisconsin, we need to grow small business, and we need cell phone service up here. I know I work for a small business. We oftentimes cannot contact our customers, and we need broadband internet access through the state. We got to look forward, not backwards, in terms of serving everyone, in my opinion.
Jeff, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Your phone cut out a little, but I think we got the gist, illustrating your point, in fact. Susan, I don't know if your respondents weighed those particular issues, but you asked about attitudes toward the economy and other economic issues, Jeff giving one key example there.
Absolutely. And I do think it's funny that Jeff cut out when he was asking for more cell phone service. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is, that is something that we're seeing both our legislators and our governor talk a lot about this year's broadband coverage and cell phone service coverage across Wisconsin. That didn't come out in our poll. That's because we just didn't ask about it. Maybe that'll be for our next La Follette School policy poll. But we did ask about some related questions. So, for instance, we asked about the federal budget deficit, and we asked about the economy and taxes. But all of those issues polled really strongly, especially with Republicans. And one of the things I want to mention, when I was taking a look at these results, I was really interested in what our independents think about major issues facing our nation and our state. And in particular, independents in the survey, which were about 15 or 16% of our survey respondents, and it's about 15 or 16% of Wisconsinites too, they're mentioning that the federal budget deficit and healthcare are some of the top issues for them.
Thanks for that call, Jeff. We're taking a look at a new survey on what Wisconsinites think about various problems facing the state and the nation. Susan Webb-Yockey is with us, director of the La Follette School of Public Affairs, professor of public affairs and political science at UW-Madison. We've got a link to the results of the survey. You can find them at WPR.org/Central Time. And you can join in right now at 800-642-1234 with your own answers to the polling questions. What do you think is the biggest threat, the biggest problem for Wisconsin, for the country as a whole? What is the most urgent for you? Is it climate change, your personal finances, government regulation, racial equity, something else? What are you worried about as we head into a midterm election? And what do you want to hear candidates talking about? What do you want to hear the media asking candidates about? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email us, ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Verrett. We're talking about the new La Follette policy poll from UW-Madison. It came out this morning. It shows what Wisconsin residents think are the biggest problems facing the state and the nation. For the state, the top three keeping people up at night are climate change, healthcare, and race relations. For national problems, it's, again, climate change, then the federal budget deficit, and the distribution of income and wealth. Susan Webb-Yockey is with us, director of the La Follette School of Public Affairs and professor of public affairs and political science at UW-Madison. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Let us know what you see as a top threat, a top problem facing Wisconsin, facing the U.S. as a whole. Also, let us know how politically active are you. Do you vote? Do you contact public officials, go to public meetings, sign petitions, share political thoughts on social media? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Let's go back to your calls now. Aiden is with us in Waterford. Aiden, hi.
Hello. I just wanted to talk about an issue that's been kind of pressing on me, and it's the how desensitized we've become to tragedy, especially in the past couple years when we see these big numbers for COVID deaths and all of these riots and things happening in our country. We don't really view them the same way that I feel we used to. And I think that's an issue that we really need to actually address. I believe that losing an individual life is just as high a toll, and we should view it as such. And I don't think we do nowadays.
Aiden, thanks for sharing what you see as a big problem here. It's a subtle point to pull on, Susan, but interesting.
Yeah, it is an interesting point. And Aiden, you're not alone in feeling that way. I suggest a book to you by Deborah Stone. It's a book that is called The Policy Paradox. And I oftentimes will teach it in some of my policymaking classes at UW-Madison. And it's exactly on this point. It's thinking about how do we think about data and these big numbers, but really also understand the individual story. And that's a really important discrepancy, especially for policymakers. Policymakers are drawn to their constituents' individual stories, not big numbers. And sometimes they don't even really understand kind of big numbers and how to use them appropriately. Deborah Stone's book is a wonderful example of how to place those two topics in contrast with each other and try to understand the policymaking process better as a result.
Aiden, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Jeremy joins us now in Racine. Jeremy, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I think the biggest issue that we face here in Wisconsin and throughout the country is an institutional crisis going on in our governing body, as a whole. It is incredibly difficult and heart-wrenching to watch these politicians politicize something as simple as building new roads or putting a bridge up or doing any type of infrastructural thing. It has been nothing but a gridlock for the past going on almost 20 years now. And the American people are getting really fed up with the Congress's inability to get the simplest things done. Scholars are considering it an institutional crisis, and I believe that's exactly what it's going on. There is no consensus with anything anymore.
Jeremy, thanks a lot for the call. And Susan, in addition to asking people about the biggest problems, you asked about things like confidence in our government. Did a lot of people feel like Jeremy did?
A lot of people feel like Jeremy does, absolutely. And we found in the Law School Policy Poll that the lowest levels of confidence in government are at the federal level, so are at the level of our national government. They're slightly higher for state government, and they're highest for local government here in Wisconsin.
Thanks a lot for that call, Jeremy, at 800-642-1234. Dan joins us next in Stevens Point. Dan, hi.
Hi there. I wanted to tell you, I've been contacting my, I've contacted President Biden. I've contacted my two senators. I've contacted my representative. I've contacted my mayor. And I've contacted my county executive all about climate change and the climate crisis that's ongoing and has been ongoing. I've been working on this for 10 years. And I'm not alone. There are thousands of us here in Wisconsin who are contacting our members of Congress, trying to get Congress to pass a something that would put a price on carbon, which is, according to the economists nationwide and climate scientists worldwide, the strongest thing we can do to reduce the worst impacts of climate change. I have seen three derechos here in Portage County, where I live, in the past few years. Three derechos have come through. Before that, I had never even heard the word derecho. We've had floods. We've had 400 or 500 year floods here in Wisconsin in the past, 8 years or so. We've had terrible storms, and they're only going to continue, and they're only going to get worse unless we take the action that needs to happen.
Dan, thanks a lot for the call. Susan, a lot of people in the survey share that worry with Dan. It's one of the top issues, the top worries people have, but it's also one of the biggest partisan divides among issues people take seriously, right?
It absolutely is. Yeah. So it is, for Democrats, one of the top issues that we polled on. It is just off the charts, considered to be an extremely big or quite a big problem by Democrats. It also is a pretty large problem for Wisconsin independents. And so this is an area that has changed across time. The La Follette School Policy Poll not only identified climate change as an important problem for a certain sector of Wisconsinites, it also asked a separate question, actually a series of questions on what we should do about climate change. So I'll preview one set of questions with you right now. So for instance, we asked our respondents, again, about 1,600 Wisconsinites spread all across our state. So we asked, should our state government, in your opinion, do more or less than it currently is to address climate change? Only about 9.6, so about 10%, said that they should be doing less than they're doing now. So our state government should be doing less on climate change. But a whopping 62% of respondents said that our state should be doing somewhat more or a lot more than it's doing right now to address climate change here in Wisconsin.
Thanks again for that call at 800-642-1234. We're looking at the new La Follette Policy Poll from UW-Madison. Susan Webb-Yaki is with us, sharing some of the results. You can find a link to the whole shebang at WPR.org/Central Time. Susan, you mentioned earlier you could break down results by different groups, so we've kind of focused on Democrats and Republicans. There were some interesting things in a couple other ways of looking at it, including youth and age. What kind of differences did you see there among age groups?
Yeah, our younger respondents, you know, I'm a college professor. I work with young students all the time. And so I'm really interested in thinking about how our younger cohort of respondents is thinking about policy problems here in Wisconsin. And we're seeing some really interesting results. Climate change, again, that's a theme that's been coming up a lot today. But let me bring up another, and that's healthcare. Healthcare is a really interesting topic in our survey. It actually is one of the top topics for all age groups, our youngest respondents and our oldest respondents in the survey. It also, interestingly, is perceived to be a major problem by Republicans, independents, and Democrats. So here's one of these consensus issues. So, you know, if you're a policymaker out there, you're wondering, where are the consensus topics for my constituencies? Here's one in Wisconsin, that's healthcare. And it's ranked very highly by young people as well.
What are you hoping people do with the survey results, whether it's policymakers or citizens around the state?
It's our hope. hope to use the survey in a couple different ways. One, we're going to use it in the classroom. We're an evidence-based institution. We want to lead with how people think, feel, and experience government. And so we're going to use it in our classes. Our faculty at the LaFollette School will also use it in their research, but we want to use it in our outreach as well. So to share on programs like this with other citizens in Wisconsin, what do they most care about, and how might they get active and engaged in trying to address those issues as well?
In a conversation we had earlier today, we talked about our divides, our partisan divides in the country. You just mentioned healthcare as a common ground. Do you hope that this survey can be part of informing us about ways that maybe we're not always so divided?
Absolutely. I do. And interestingly, there's a big question bank on water policy in the survey, right? And one of the things, the takeaway messages from the respondents, so our fellow Wisconsinites, what do they really feel about water policy in Wisconsin? And one of the messages we're seeing across those questions is that they really feel like the polluters, people that are polluting, ought to pay. Sort of a polluter should pay message. It's coming out of the results. We wouldn't have known that before the LaFollette School policy poll. So this inaugural policy poll is already shedding light on important topics here in Wisconsin, like water policy.
I know one big goal for surveys that go on over time is to not just get snapshots in time, but see how things change, how attitudes change on issues. Are you hoping to do a series of surveys? If so, how often?
That's a great question. And I mentioned earlier that we're an evidence-based institution. We are. And so we're going to look at the evidence. So, if this survey gets used, and if this survey is appreciated by Wisconsinites, by our students, by our faculty, by our broader public, then we're going to do it again. And if it's not, then we'll move on to something else that's important for our state.
As we wrap up, what are you watching for next as you watch for ways to understand what we in Wisconsin think about the big issues?
Well, I think we are in the middle of an ongoing crisis in healthcare. Right now, it's COVID, and our hospitals in Wisconsin are certainly being dramatically impacted by it. I'm watching that issue very closely across this next election. We move into these statewide, gubernatorial, and U.S. Senate elections. I do expect. In fact, I demand that our policymakers address important issues.
Susan, thanks for joining us. That's Susan Webb-Yockey, director of the LaFollette School of Public Affairs. We talked to her about the new LaFollette policy poll showing Wisconsin residents split along party lines on some issues, some room for agreement as well. Now, who doesn't want to juice up their brain power? Tuning our minds to run at a higher level sounds like a good idea, and there are lots of people who'd be happy to take our money in exchange for supplements, trainings, games, and apps they say will boost our brains. But do they work? Results are sketchy at best, but there are some proven brain boosters, and a lot of them involve doing things with other people. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you spent a lot of time thinking about how to boost your thinking and problem-solving skills? Do you do some kind of brain training app or seek out foods or supplements that might help with that? Do you do things with other people that seems to help stimulate your brain? Taking a class, a book group, playing games. I like playing games. You can join at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you could post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Emily Willingham is a science writer with work appearing in publications including The New York Times, Scientific American, and Forbes. Her new book is called The Tailored Brain, From Ketamine to Keto to Companionship, A User's Guide to Feeling Better and Thinking Smarter. Emily, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, Rob. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
You write that people have used a lot of metaphors for the brain over the years, most recently like a machine or a computer. You have an interesting one, though. Our brain is kind of like a planet. Can you talk about why you like that metaphor?
I like that metaphor preferentially over talking about the brain being something that's wired, because wiring sounds so not organic. And I don't mean that in terms of like food that you eat that's organic, but I mean in terms of a living thing, like a penguin or a tree. And it's not just about the neurons that are in it that form that wiring, but, you know, 50% of the other cells in our brains are not those kinds of cells. And all these things are interacting like almost like an ecosystem or a larger version of an ecosystem, which is a planet. And I think that metaphor captures that better.
And another part of that is there's one planet and there's another planet and there's lots of planets, and their gravity can affect the other orbits. One planet can affect another. And that's a key to a lot of the thinking behind what does work to make our brains better. Could you talk about that?
Yeah, and exploring some of the things that are, you know, the claims that are made about making our brains better, they seem to focus so much on individual brains, like what can you do for your brain, right? And what I've learned through digging through a lot of the research is that we might be better off looking at what happens with the other brains around us as we work to improve ourselves, because we almost, none of us lives alone and, you know, without contact with other people.
And our brains evolved in the same way, right? We're a very social animal. That's maybe why our brains are what they are. When you put it that way, I hadn't thought of it this way. It almost seems weird to not think about the social side of our brains if we want to be smarter, whatever that means.
Right. That's kind of the conclusion I came to as well, because we have a lot in common with other social species, both in terms of, you know, how we interact and construct our social interactions. And then also just in the way our brains operate. There are a lot of, you know, mammalian social species anyway. And, you know, it's interesting because all these promises are about, you know, improving your smarts, as it were. But so few things focus on, well, how do you get along with each other better, or interact with each other better, or understand each other better?
Talking to Emily Willingham about her new book, The Tailored Brain, From Ketamine to Keto to Companionship, A User's Guide to Feeling Better and Thinking Smarter. You can join in with your thoughts, your questions about our brains and how to better them. 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Emily, our brains are pretty complicated. One tricky thing, it turns out, if we want to make our brains better or smarter or whatever, it's really hard to measure success, right?
Right. I mean, it depends on what you're trying to measure. But if you're talking about something like your intelligence, you know, the measures for those have a lot of things that complicate them or confound them. And they're not by any means pure measures of what our capacities are. And so that's hard to capture. It carries a lot of the biases of, you know, who's doing the testing and making the tests.
Now, let's look at different possible approaches to the bettering of the brain. As I mentioned, there are a lot of places we could spend our money for supplements or brain training apps. Should I be whipping out my credit card and going online right now to sign up for these things?
Well, so I have good news for you. No, you don't need to do that. What I found was, I was surprised by it because I came to a lot of this pretty agnostically. And what I found is that most of the things that seem to have the biggest effects don't cost us money. You move around, you know, physical activity, you engage with other people. And yes, I was most surprised, I think, by the mindfulness effects and how that does seem to improve a lot of the things that we maybe should be focused on improving.
Let's talk about that doing things with other people. One of the things that does stand out as showing brain improvement, as you write about in the book, is doing some kind of learning or creative activity in a context with other people. Sounds kind of like school, say. What kind of things do we know work when we get together and boost our brains, plural?
It's interesting because it kind of helps us organize around who we are relative to other people. We can draw the boundary of ourselves versus someone else, and we can also put ourselves in their shoes and share experiences with them and come to understand those experiences as well, which expands our minds. And when we learn things about other people, we show curiosity about other people, we're constantly incorporating that information into our own worldview and weaving that in, and even using that to sort of make predictions and solve problems. It's all just an ongoing learning process when we interact with other people that way.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Ross is with us from Middleton. Ross, hi.
Hey, Rob. So I retired a year and a half ago or so, and looked at a guitar a few times when I was younger, and then finally thought, well, why don't I learn an instrument, which is something, no real musical background. So that's been a real challenge, learning to read music, learning to put my fingers wherever they're supposed to go. And kind of related to what you guys were saying was, it's, you know, whether or not my brain is getting bigger or smaller, I don't know. But I find that there's no way in heck that I would play in front of people that to play music in front of them. But what I do enjoy is practicing with other people that are also learning.
Yeah. What does that feel like, Ross? What, how does it feel playing alone at home, say, versus in a group by interacting with other people as you're learning?
Right. So when you're on your own, you can kind of go in whatever direction you want to go. I mean, I do need some structure because I don't have the skill set to just sort of teach myself. So there's some tools out there that can kind of help you to learn it. So I like the idea of sort of going with something, saying I'm not going to do this and I'm going to do that. And then when I'm with like there's some Zoom classes because we're in this COVIDian age, and it's sort of nice just to be able to just sort of see different people at different stages, more or less beginning, and it just makes it easier to sort of play in front of other people.
Ross, thank you so much for sharing that at 800-642-1234. Emily, Ross, kind of a poster child for a lot of what you're saying.
Yeah, I like to hear that story. That was a great story. There is something to be said to having other people at the table as you learn, and you see where they need help and you can help them or they can help you. And this exchange of ideas is another reason, I think, to kind of have more people at your brain table with you and to have those exchanges, get that satisfaction.
Ross, thanks again for calling in at 800-642-1234. That reminds me about, you've got a chapter on creativity and boosting our creativity, our creative minds in particular. What kind of things seem to work well for that?
You know, it's interesting. Again, it's other people, it turns out. I mean, it's not just in the brainstorming sense, although that can help. But as I've gotten older, especially, this has become more obvious to me. But when you do include other people, when you're trying to think of things or solve a problem or come up with the ways to do it, they can come up with things that you're never anywhere near. And I just think that that's so useful. And it does help with creativity to have other people contributing.
And one supplement that does seem to help is eating fruits and veggies.
I had to put that in there for the sake of, you know, parents everywhere, but it's just a very sort of, you know, low level of evidence that suggested in a couple of studies that yes, that consumption was associated with, it doesn't mean it's causal, but associated with sort of better creativity scores.
So maybe creative people like their fruits and veggies. It could go either way.
Exactly. There's some potential conflation there.
We're talking to science writer Emily Willingham about her new book, The Tailored Brain, From Ketamine to Keto to Companionship, A User's Guide to Feeling Better and Thinking Smarter. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Is there something that you find makes you feel better and think more clearly, think smarter? Have you already been doing some of the things we've been talking about with our guest? Is there a social activity that you do, maybe while you're learning something along the way, that you don't know if it makes you feel smarter? Maybe you do, but it makes you feel better as you're doing it. And what questions do you have for our guest about some of the brain science she's been researching? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with science writer Emily Willingham about her new book, The Tailored Brain. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions, your thoughts on how to build a better brain. Are there little things you do to try to keep your brain working well, to feel smarter or think more clearly? Do you do creative things with other people? Tell us about it. 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go back to your calls now. Roger is with us in Grantsburg. Roger, hi.
How are you doing? Love your show. Great, great topic today.
Thanks.
I was curious if she had any sections in her book about linking your subconscious with your conscience and your dreams and making, you know, heads or tails, I guess heads or tails out of your dreams. And if you can link that into your conscious and use it.
Roger, thanks for the call. I talked to a dream researcher not that long ago, who said dreams are still pretty mysterious. Emily, any thoughts on doing the things Roger is hoping to do? He wants to link our subconscious with our conscious and learn from our dreams.
I didn't directly address that in the book, but I did look at some of what it might mean if you remember your dreams. And there's there may be some distinction in brain connectivity between people who wake up and remember enormous detail about their dreams and people who don't. So there's certainly something going on there, and it might be related to memory and what we can retain in memory.
Roger, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Terry on Facebook writes, I'm not familiar with mindfulness. Can you address what it is? Talk a little more about it. You'd mentioned a mindfulness, Emily, as one of these tools to help develop our brains.
Yeah, mindfulness is actually kind of a bucket term that people use. It can be defined in a lot of ways, but essentially it's where you draw yourself, I'm going to define it my way. Mm-hmm. You draw yourself into the moment. You observe what's going on around you right now without the sort of ruminatory spiraling that you can get into. And you just observe without judgment and sort of focus on what's happening in the moment. I think one of a sort of easily accessible activity that's related to it is a breathing activity where you just do deep breathing and exhalations for a minute or two and just really focus on doing that to just kind of recenter yourself and get yourself out of your own brain.
Let's go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Stephanie is with us in New Berlin. Stephanie, hi.
Hi. This was a cool topic. It kind of made me think of like when I've been to traveling to different countries, I see a lot of people like going out and learning how to play chess together. So sometimes we're at parks, they're like, we'll go to like different locations, you know, so people just like hanging out, socializing, bringing a chessboard and just like hanging out and be able to do that. So I like to do that actually a lot, like with a friend or a partner or something, just go out to like a cool cafe or like a brewery outside. I don't see that as much around here, but it's really fun, and I encourage other people to try it too.
Stephanie, that's great. I have done that. It's something I hope to do in the future, hopefully in a more post-COVIDian age, as one of our callers said earlier. Do you get funny looks, or when people see you doing it, do they say, yeah, I want to do that too?
Actually, yeah, people are like really curious and like, oh, that's really cool. I never thought of that before, you know, so it's just like, why not? Like you can sit at home and do it, or you can go outside and like have fun, enjoy the fresh air, or like sit at a park and have a picnic and play some chess, you know. So there are a lot of portable chess boards that are like magnetic, so it makes it much easier to do something like that. But there's a lot of good ones where you can just take them with you and like fold them up when you're done. So I think it's a fun idea.
Stephanie, thank you so much for sharing that. And Emily, I think we might think, oh, if I play on a chess app against a robot, that's going to boost my brain. Stephanie's way is going to be way better from what I'm hearing you say.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that because they've looked at chess very closely, including somebody who's a chess master. He loves chess, but you know, if you play chess just on your own, you get better at playing chess, but it doesn't necessarily transfer and make you, you know, like Bradley Cooper in the movie Limitless. But what your caller just described, Stephanie, I believe, it's just, you know, a fabulous way to spend your time. You're outside, you're getting that kind of boost from being in nature, you're getting a boost from doing this with other people. Games are fun. If you love chess, that's fun. All of these things are very positive activities that can kind of clear your brain of some of its burden and let you just have a good time.
Stephanie, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We're talking to Emily Willingham, author of the new book, The Tailored Brain, From Ketamine to Keto to Companionship, A User's Guide to Feeling Better and Thinking Smarter. A couple other things I wanted to get into, Emily. You talk about this idea of cognitive overload. And if we could figure out how to deal with that, it's, you know, it may not make us permanently smarter, but it's going to help us think more clearly in the moment. What is cognitive overload? How do we fight it?
It's when you've got too many things going on in your brain so that you lose the ability to make sort of cool-headed decisions, for example. I think of myself as like, you know, being in the kitchen, there's a toddler hanging onto your leg, the pot's boiling over, something just caught on fire, your phone rings, and someone rings the doorbell. That's kind of a lot. That's cognitive overload. And in that situation, if somebody came up to me and said, Emily, I'm going to give you $20 right now, but if you wait 15 minutes, I'll give you $40, I would say, give me the $20 and get out of here. I've got to deal with this fire. So, you know, that's what cognitive overload can feel like. And there are lots of accessible ways to offload some of that. And we use, you know, Google, like electronic calendars and things like that is one way that we do it. So we don't have to keep remembering all of those things ourselves. We share with friends, we tell each other stories and, you know, help each other problem solve. All of these are tactics for releasing some of that burden.
I have a very personal example. When I first became a radio host, hosting an afternoon talk show, doing the interviews and doing all the prep. And if I went and met my wife and kids at a restaurant after, the menu was too much. Mm. I could not do that level of research at that point. Gradually got better. I got used to it. I think the stress came out of it. Can we just kind of, if things become routine, I guess, if we dial down the stress and anxiety, is that one way to help overcome that cognitive overload?
Yeah, absolutely. I think those two things interact. I think a cognitive, you know, overload creates stress and anxiety. And if you're extremely stressed or anxious, you have more trouble, you know, making decisions because it's taking up so much of your resource or what resources you have available just to deal with feeling all of that stress or anxiety. So absolutely.
Another thing you spend some time on that I love is the power of storytelling and involved with that empathy for other people. Can you tell us how we can use that and what it can do for us?
It was one of my favorite things to discover in the research for this book. And it's a way to connect with minds that are, you know, apart from us in miles or even by centuries and learn what was in those brains and to share that with them. And when you read a story, not only do you have to kind of understand and try to predict and problem solve what's going on with the characters in the story, but you're also in the mind of the person who's telling that story. And you're trying to do some mind reading with that as well. And all of this is just excellent practice for the key skills of being a human being.
So a nice thing about so many of the things you've talked about today is there are things we can kind of integrate into our daily lives. Having gone through all this research, are there some of these things you've taken up and you find yourselves doing them on a daily basis?
I do. And it's the mindfulness thing, especially. This is not something that I'm naturally attracted to doing. And I and I didn't come to this with like, woo, I'm just going to be mindful now. But I was writing this book largely during the entirety of this pandemic, and I found so much utility in just doing that thing where you pause, you stop the anxiety spiral, you stop the rumination spiral, you look around you, you just take note of what's there right now in this moment, you're doing all right, and just, you know, just go from, take it from that baseline.
I feel like so many of the things you're talking about, if I were a Silicon Valley company, I'd have a hard time bundling up. Yeah, just think more about what you're doing and talk to other people more. Maybe eat some fruits and veggies. I don't know. It seems like, I guess I understand why there's a bias toward we've got a pill.
I guess so, but I think they're kind of, you can tell they're sort of onto something because of this whole trend toward the health apps. You know, the three things I found really being with other people, some kind of mindfulness practice and physical activity. And I, you know, if you're paying attention to what they're doing with apps, they're like, here's your physical activity app. Hmm. If you have an Apple Watch, it's like telling you to breathe all the time. It's time to do your breathing practice. And so, you know, they see this at least that it's, there's some openings here.
As we wrap up, you write your, one of your goals here is to help people in some ways find a peace as they deal with their brains and try to make them better. What would that look like?
Well, I think the first step is to interrogate why you think you have something that you need to change or improve, and whether that's something that's coming from inside of you or is being imposed on you. So I think that's one question to ask. And then the other question is to think, well, what would be the best thing to improve? Do I need to be, you know, 3 quote unquote IQ points smarter? Or would it be better if I'm on Twitter and somebody says something kind of that makes me mad? Do I come out with a gut punch at them right out of the gate? Or do I just let it go by and practice a little kind of non-judgmentalism and, you know, save myself that effort and then maybe some pain.
Emily, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for sharing this with us today.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
Emily Willingham is a science writer, and we talked to her today about her new book. It's called The Tailored Brain, From Ketamine to Keto to Companionship, A User's Guide to Feeling Better and Thinking Smarter.